Republic Yemeni number one.
Hello, 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 my friends, and probably not so many friends if any people showing up that I've never seen before. Welcome. Some of you are on Facebook. I got to check the Facebook feed to even see the comments on there because the way I have it set up, I cannot see the comments within the app. So let me log on to that. Guys, please put your hands together for the hilarious, the talented, the smart, the Palestinian activist, sexy motherfucker with the newest mustache, Amr Zahar.
Thank you.
How's it going, buddy?
Wonderful, man. How are you?
I'm good, bro. Good. Thank you for picking me up at the airport when I flew in the other day.
My pleasure. It's like our Arab duty.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I wasn't even asking for it, and it was nice. You were like, I'll be your Uber.
Yeah, of course.
You're busy, man. You're such a busy man. You're going to Palestine soon.
Yeah, next week we're doing that Palestine Comedy Festival that you came to in 2018.
Yeah.
We're doing it again this year. We started it in 2015, but now after being off 2020 and 21 because of the pandemic, we're finally bringing it back. So people are excited.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice, bro. You bringing more comics than last time?
I think it's about the same, 7 to 8 comics. Going to be a lot of fun. Yeah, we're going to have a lot of fun, man.
You bringing newer ones? Are you bringing any comics that like have never been out there with you?
Yeah, a few. About actually, most of them this time have never been out there. Nice. They're mostly like they're all Arab American, up and coming. A couple of really established comics, but yeah, all Arab American this time.
Nice.
Yeah.
What do you mean this time?
A couple times we brought some non Arab Americans.
Okay.
You know, I brought a female comedian from Detroit one time, like 5 years, like 2016. Her name was Heather.
Okay.
Heather J.
Oh, I know. Heather J.
Oh, Heather. You know Heather J?
Yeah. Of course I know Heather J.
Yeah. Let me tell you the greatest story about
That's
Palestine.
Great that you took Heather J. I love Heather J.
Let me tell you a great story about Palestine and Heather J. So people ask me, Mike, sometimes before – I know you have like questions and stuff. But before we get into all of that.
No, we don't have questions. We do whatever, bro.
Okay, good. People ask me sometimes. They say to me, Amr, are you famous? You know, because I have like – I'm verified on Facebook and Instagram, hundreds of thousands of followers. People are like, are you famous? And I say to them, you know what? Yes, but I'm very specifically famous. Like, you know, Palestinians know who I am.
Niche.
Yeah. Arab Americans know, a lot of them know
people
who I am.
People in Dearborn know who
you
are.
Yeah, if you Google like Arab Palestinian comedian, I'm like half the results. So if you see me after binging my videos, you're going to feel like you met somebody very famous. And as you saw in Palestine, like 99% of the world doesn't know who I am, but 1% might. And they're really dedicated. They like really, really,
sure.
Really, you saw them. So
yes, I saw.
So in 2016, in 2016, we did this comedy festival and I took Heather J.
Heather J.
Okay, who's very, very funny.
Very
At that
funny.
Time, she wasn't very famous. And as you might know, Heather J is black.
Yes.
Okay, she's from Detroit. Yes. She had a very funny joke when we were in Palestine. She said, "All I'm looking around and I see a bunch of white people with guns telling all the brown people where to go." And she said, "It feels just like Detroit."
Yeah. That's
anyway, great. So as you know, we stayed in a hotel called the Millennium Hotel, right? We all stayed there.
Same hotel.
And every night, remember after the shows, every night we would walk downtown and get a shawarma from this place called Shawarma Bonjour, right?
Yes, bonjour.
So we did that in 2016 too. So we go down there, we're getting our shawarmas, me and all the comedians that I brought from America, and we finish and we're leaving. And as we're leaving, there's this guy that sells bread. Remember the guy selling bread on the carts on the street? There's a guy selling bread.
It was kind of like sweet bread too,
yeah,
right?
Sweet, sweet circular bread.
Yes.
Okay, it's called kak el utz. It's called Jerusalem
yes,
bread.
Yes, yes. I remember I had a kak before.
So
I hate saying that.
Yeah, yeah.
I've had kak before.
You have to make sure you got to be able to speak Arabic.
You got to have the
yeah. If you can't say the kak. It's terrible.
Or unless it sounds like it's like I'm just –
Yeah, yeah. Well, unless you actually do like, but anyway,
something wrong.
There's nothing
with that.
Wrong with that. So the guy who's selling the bread, he sees me, this Palestinian guy, and he recognizes me. Okay, and he's like, Ahmed, oh my God, you are here. I love you. You are amazing. I'm like, oh man, thanks. You know, and Arabs do this thing that when they see me, they take out their phone and they start showing me my videos on their phone. He's like, you know this video? I'm like, yeah,
I made it. I'm in it.
So he's taking pictures with me. He's taking selfies with me. He's FaceTiming his friends. Look at me. I'm with Amir. And all this time, I'm looking at all the other comedians I brought from America. I'm like, see, I'm famous. And I'm getting ready to say bye to this guy, to this Jerusalem bread guy. And I'm like, all right, man, great to meet you. You know, yatik el afi, so nice to meet you. And he grabs my arm. And he said to me, he said in Arabic, but I'll say it in English. He said, Amir, Amir, one more thing. I said, well, what is it? He said, could you introduce me to her? And he pointed at Heather. And I said to him, yeah, of course, but why? Why? He said, Amir, I have lived my whole life here in Ramallah, under occupation. And every night I sell my bread in the street. And I have never left Palestine in my whole life. And I never thought, I never imagined I would see in front of me with my own two eyes, Janet Jackson. So in this moment, I had a very important decision. You know, like, what do I do? But I knew what the right thing was to do. I looked at Heather and I was like, hey, Janet. Come here, because this guy's taking a picture of Janet Jackson, okay? I'm not going to fuck up his life. He's taking a picture of Janet. Thank God he didn't.
He's not joking.
No, he thought she was Janet Jackson.
He seriously.
Yeah, he said.
He saw her do stand-up.
No. He just saw a black woman in the street.
And he's like, Janet Jackson.
So thank God he didn't speak English that good, because he was just saying general shit to her, like, oh, I love you very much. You are amazing. She's like, was he at the show? I was like, I don't know, maybe. And, you know, in Arabic, I think he looked at her and he was like, Allah yirham Michael, we're very sad, you know.
Yeah. That's
the point of the story is this, Michael.
If you want to explain to people what he said.
Yeah, she said, like, God bless the soul of Michael, you know, your brother. You know, we're very upset we lost him. The point of the story is this, okay? I'm very famous. But the people who think I'm famous, they also think all black women are Janet Jackson, okay? They live under occupation. They haven't really been out in the world.
Or they think you're that level of famous.
That's what I was going to say.
You're hanging out with Janet Jackson.
I was
going
to say, bro. The next part was, and that's why I'm lucky, is that the people who love me so much that they think that I'm famous enough to hang out with Janet Jackson, like in Ramallah on a Wednesday night at 11:30 eating shawarma. Do you know how fucking famous, do you know how much that guy loves me?
Yeah.
So, you know,
see that, how much Janet Jackson loves you to come to Palestine?
That made me feel very lucky.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So Hollywood, because I talk about Palestine a lot, Hollywood might not like me very much. They try to shut down my Instagram and Twitter all the time. They don't like me very much. But the Jerusalem bread guy in Ramallah, he loved me. And that's all that fucking matters to me.
Exactly, bro. That's a great story. I think I remember you telling me that story a while back, man. I keep forgetting that it's Heather J.
Yeah, it was Heather J, yeah.
Damn. Yeah, I know Heather J now, man. Yeah,
I never told her, but now I tell that joke on stage. But
does she know?
No, I just brought her over and she's like, why does he want
to
take
you? You never broke it to her that day?
No, because it kind of doesn't put our people in the best light. You know, so I was like,
but it's comedy, whatever.
Sure. But no, I didn't tell her that day. But yeah, I just, she was like, was he at the show? I was like, I don't think,
I think she would have fucking liked that.
She probably would have.
Thought I was Janet Jackson.
Yeah,
shit.
Right. Except, you know, she looks nothing like Janet Jackson.
Yeah, but she is pretty though.
She's beautiful.
Yeah.
But she doesn't look like Janet Jackson.
Yeah, she doesn't look like Janet Jackson.
Now, here's what I learned later. Is that
she Janet doesn't look like Janet Jackson at
here's
all.
What I learned later. Janet Jackson is a UNICEF ambassador, and she had been in Palestine.
I thought you were going to say she's unisex. I'm like, what?
No. She's a UNICEF ambassador, and she had been in Palestine like 6 months before. And so she was probably in the newspaper. So maybe this bread guy was like, you know, she's still around. She's still here, and she's hanging out with Ahmed. You know, I don't know. I'm trying to give him the benefit of the doubt.
We're doing our investigations, yeah, bro.
I'm trying to give him the benefit of the doubt. But my point is, Palestine, that bread guy in Palestine, he is part of the Rhythm Nation. He is.
Man, bro. Big ups to Palestine, man. I mean, Palestine with the shawarma, man. I was just telling somebody, actually, I was hanging with you. We were talking about. Yeah, with me, you, Mike Bataille, we're at Hamido's.
Yeah.
Where I believe in Dearborn, Michigan is the best place you're going to get shawarma in America.
Yeah, it's very good.
In America, number one spot for you to get shawarma, hands down. Hmm. I thought it was the world, wallah. You know what I mean? I've never been. Then we went to Palestine, that place Bonjour.
Yeah.
I hope it's still there.
Oh, it is still there.
Okay.
It's still there.
They make these shawarmas. Man, they are literally the size of like a 10-year-old's leg.
Yeah, for like $3. And, you know, maybe because there's no FDA, there's no like, so you can just serve whatever you want. You know, I don't know.
But an actual leg.
Yeah. It's delicious.
It's delicious. It's so good. Yeah, yeah. And then the bread guy across the street with the gak.
Gak, gak.
Gak.
Gak. Yes.
When was the last time you were in Palestine?
So I was there last June, 2021.
Okay. Did you did you do the festival then?
No, no, because it was everything was still kind of shut down.
There how about
no festivals?
How about 2020? Nothing?
No. So 2019 was the last time we did the festival.
Okay. So you did.
Now we're coming back in 2022.
Right.
Yeah.
Thanks for bringing me up for 2018. That was
It was a lot of fun. You did great, man. People loved you.
Thank you, man. I gotta queue up some videos from that.
You're probably the only Yemeni. You're definitely the only Yemeni comic to ever be in Palestine, and you're one of few Yemenis ever to be able to go because a lot of them can't go. But, I mean, you did a great job.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate it, man. I had a good time. And the thing that kills me about Palestine, man, is, like I always tell people, you got to travel as much as you possibly can. Mm-hmm. Because every time you travel, and no matter where I travel, even if I travel to places where people are like, oh, man, you're going to hate that place. Or, man, you know, the people or oh, whatever. I don't know whether it's you attract whatever you attract, but no matter where I go, I meet people in whatever country I go that makes me go, fuck, I was lied to.
Yeah. Oh, of course.
I was lied to. I was given a story that was completely – I'm still not sold on China, but I haven't really vacationed in China. I've only done layovers there.
Okay. Oh, well, that's not really visiting.
No, it's not really at all, man. So, you know, but I'm still scared of China.
Have you been to Chinatowns in America? Okay, sorry. But I mean, look.
Were you going to give me some advice? What is it?
I mean, because that's a lot of
Americans. I've been to every Chinatown in every country, bro.
That's a lot of Americans' idea of like diversity, right? America is this – one thing you learn about the rest of the world and America when you travel is that, yes, like you said, we've been lied to about how people are. We've been lied to about how advanced other cultures are, right? I mean, how many times were you were growing up here, right? And people would say to you, oh, back in the Arab world or in Yemen or Palestine, do you guys have cars? Or do you guys have TVs? And I'm like, bro, yes, of course. I mean, like,
yes.
All that stuff.
Shopping centers, plazas, right.
All that shit exists.
Running water clouds,
stand up comedy,
sun.
You know, I mean, right, it's all there. So America thinks it has everything and the rest of the world has nothing.
Yeah.
So you know, this is what we're raised on. Yeah. And we're not and we're raised on this idea that America is sort of the center and the standard. And of course it's not.
Right.
And we're not really exposed to other cultures. We understand that there's other people in the world because they come here, but we don't go anywhere. See, this is when it hit me. I was in Ramallah one time and I was talking to a friend of mine about 10 years ago. And I said to him, what are you doing this week? He said, Monday, I'm going to hang out with my dad. Tuesday, I'm taking my family out to dinner. Wednesday, I'm going to Germany. Friday night, I have an event back here. I said, whoa, wait a second. So Wednesday, you're going to Germany? He said, yeah. Because in America, if somebody says they're going to Europe or they're going anywhere outside of America, it's like, that's a big deal, right? That's 3-4 days just traveling.
Sure.
And then it hit me that, you know, in that part of the world where we're from, in you know, the greater like Syria region, if you want to travel from Palestine or Jordan or Lebanon to London, let's say, it's only like a 4.5-hour flight. That's here to LA. But in that 4.5-hour flight, you pass over like 25 cultures and languages and they kind of know each other exist and they interact in each other's cultures.
And have been?
Right, right.
Here, for a long time?
You can take a plane from Florida to Alaska, it's like 11 hours and it's one language.
Yeah.
And it's not even the best version of that language. And this is the world we live in, right? All we understand is Mexicans. Say,
do you mean the Florida version?
What, the whole, all of it. All of it.
Only,
all of it.
Come on,
all,
man.
All the dialects of America. I mean, you
which
know,
is the best version?
England.
South
I mean, that's
African?
Where it came from. Well, South Africa, that's, you know, they're invaders. But in any case, you know, the point is, we don't really have that sort of global experience that people come here and we understand that they're from somewhere far away, but we very rarely go anywhere. Something like 40% of Americans don't ever leave their zip code their whole life or their area code. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, it's like crazy, man. But, you know, that's why America is the best place to live. It's very convenient. You have everything you need. But it's very sheltering, too.
Yeah, bro.
It can be. You got to fight against that and go travel.
Yes, you got to fight against that. You got to travel, and you can't be one of those Americans that's like, oh, man, I'm traveling. I'm going to South Carolina.
Right.
God damn it. That's not traveling. I'm sorry, man.
No, it's not. And Cancun in a resort where with a bunch of other white people from America.
That's also.
That's not traveling.
That's right? Not traveling.
You know,
the first time I actually traveled on my own, I did a resort with my girlfriend at the time. We did Cabo.
Yeah.
But it was a good deal. At the time, I didn't have that much money.
Sure.
And it was a really good deal. It's like, you know, whatever. Like, it was like 8 days for the both of us. It was like, at the time, like not even $3,000.
Yeah.
All-inclusive resort, right? But, man, it didn't take me till day two where I realized, nah, the game plan is use the all-inclusive resort to drink on the beach and have the stuff brought out to you. But at nighttime, don't have dinner at the resort.
Right. Get out.
Get the fuck out.
Yeah, but most people don't.
And I learned this as a young kid, man. This is on my own I learned it. It's like I kept looking and looking for a place to eat. And I didn't know why every place I looked in, it wasn't working for me.
Right.
It wasn't until I found the one spot off the beaten path where there wasn't one white person in there.
Right.
And not one person in there spoke English.
Right.
That's when my dumb young brain was just like, this is the spot.
That's right.
And from that, that's the right move.
Of course.
You know, but yeah, fuck those. I don't do those resorts anymore.
No, I mean, if you're just
I did that the one time and that was it.
If you're going to go to Mexico to hang out with a bunch of Americans, then what's the fucking point?
Bro, you know? it was after like, I remember day six, you got sick of seeing the same fat white people, right. Bro.
Right.
Being their same ways, you know, right. Like the one lady I knew, I was like, oh man, the fucking buffet is going to be open. This bitch is going to be doing the same thing.
Right.
She's going to be yelling about the same shit.
And being American, like, why doesn't anybody speak English?
Yes. Look at all these minorities.
Right. Oh, man.
Fuck it, hey, man.
White but, people, the worst.
So, how's your sex life?
It's fine. I mean, I haven't been informed of any children, so that's good.
You know, hey! You're not going to have any kids, huh?
I know. I think maybe I'd like to. I don't know. You know, I have no idea. But, you know, I haven't
pushing for it?
I'm open to it. It's not a goal. It's not something I'm against. I'm open to it. I think it'd be nice. I'm not pushing for it, you know.
I used to be like that.
You know, it's happened. Now you don't want any?
Now I that's it.
Yeah?
Done.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm
getting to that age where I'm just like, I don't know if I want to.
Yeah, you don't want to be like old when they're young, you know, that kind of
there's
stuff.
There's that, but there's also the energy thing.
Right. Which that's the same thing. Right. I mean, you don't have as much energy as you used to?
Well, no, I mean, well, yeah, obviously, but I'm just saying I still have an abundance of energy, but still, could you imagine, you know, doing 20?
I mean, it's an arrogant thing, obviously, to want to have kids. It's a very like primal, like I need to continue my legacy type thing. It's very selfish. I mean, it's not like this world is an amazing place to bring somebody into. This world's fucked up.
It kind of is.
Yeah, of course it is. I mean,
right now, right now,
it kind of is a good time. You can die at school. I mean, especially America.
Before you could die. From a fucking chicken scratch. You didn't have like antibiotics and shit.
Okay,
you know
fine,
what I
mean? Sure, yes.
Like you,
still
you
better had than diarrhea. Getting shot at school.
You got diarrhea one time, bro. Yeah. People just start saying bye to you.
That's right.
That was it.
Yes, yes. But I mean, you know, I'd rather be killed by nature than another human being. And, you know, another human being is
I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'd but rather have case. Air conditioning. Well, I swear I'd rather have air conditioning and know that a human's probably going to come kill me one day.
Well, would you rather have air conditioning and mass shootings or no air conditioning and no mass shootings?
I'd rather have air conditioning and mass shootings because the mass shootings, I'm serious, makes me really appreciate having this air conditioning.
Right, right. Oh, okay. All right.
Cool. If there was no death,
you wouldn't really appreciate everything that's around you?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, maybe that's one.
You don't think so? You don't look at stuff like that? Like,
no.
You don't.
No, I mean, look, the human beings are amazing. We've created amazing things. Every year we create new amazing things. But I don't think that has to go hand in hand with death and destruction. You know, I mean, I can appreciate those things without having death and destruction around me.
I understand not having it around you. I think I'm talking more philosophical or on a more bird's eye plane, whereas like imagine if we were all immortal.
Okay.
Would we even appreciate life as much as we do?
Of course, but mortality has existed forever. Everyone's always known that they're mortal. Now things are just more – it's just more dangerous. But everybody knew about mortality.
Is it more dangerous
plus,
now?
Is it
really more dangerous now? I think it's way safer now.
It depends. I guess it depends on how you define danger. But I mean I know that, you know, 50 years ago you weren't worried about sending your kids to school and them getting shot. You weren't worried about getting shot in a mall because somebody, some white kid had a bad day, or because some white kid was reading racist stuff online and decided all the black people need to die. So you weren't worried about walking into a supermarket with black people. I mean, like, that kind of stuff is real. Well, the black people stuff was happening forever. But in any case, that kind of stuff is real now. And that is that most of those things were not real fears. Even when I look, you and I are around the same age. We didn't have active shooter drills.
We had fire drills.
That was a big deal. OK, yeah. Now they're having active shooter drills. I mean, that's ridiculous. That's something else.
I think you and I, we definitely don't agree too much about the approach on guns.
Yeah,
I am conservative on guns. But at the same time, like I said, I have ideas that are also liberal about the way we should approach guns. But how you're saying that, like, things are more dangerous. Everything you said to me right now just says that things aren't necessarily more dangerous. Things seem to be perceived more dangerous because we're inundated with so much information. So now the information pipeline is feeding us like this really like narrow view of the world. So like whatever the topic is that's hot right now, school shootings, now that's all you can think of.
Well, it's hot because they're hot, or not school mash, but also objectively, those things didn't exist.
And I think
40 years ago,
I think
they were there and we were ignoring them.
I think a lot of that is because of the information pipeline. I think the internet is forcing us to have this hive mind where people like those mass shooters are like, I have an audience now.
If I do it,
my picture is going to be on TV.
Yeah, maybe
they're going to parade me around forever. You know, it's like I almost wish we had a way to be like, all right, a school shooting happened, but we're not going to release their picture. We're not going to show their face. We're not. Does it help any of us to know who that person is really?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you also, that sort of quick information and the internet and technology that exists everywhere in the world. But America is the one with this phenomenon of mass shootings. And it's two reasons. One of them is obviously you can't just discount the easy access to guns and you know, semi-automatic rifles and that kind of stuff. You can't just discount
it. And the abundance of them.
Right. And that's number one. But the other thing is cultural too. I mean, you know, there's some, you know, America has always been this built on this idea of like individualism and pull yourself up by your bootstraps and all that kind of stuff. And that's created a lot of wealth and capitalism and all that kind of stuff. But it also creates a lot of loneliness. Like, so I tell this joke. I did a comedy special in Dearborn a few months ago, and we're going to be releasing it soon.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And I tell this joke where I say, you know, the comedy special is called We're Still Not White, about Arab Americans. And because they call us white on the census and all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
But, you know, one of the ways I say we're not white is that I say, you know, when they have these mass shootings, and I know I'm not white because I see how they interview like the white mass shooter's neighbors, and they're always like, you know, we're so shocked by this. We never thought this is such a surprise to us. He was such a good neighbor. I haven't seen him for 5 years. And okay, we're here sitting in the heart of East Dearborn, at neighborhoods that's 90% Arab. That would never happen here. Our culture is everyone is in everyone's business. Okay.
Right.
It's a very communal. Now that means you don't have any privacy, but it also means that everyone sort of holds everyone close. Okay. And you don't have as much crime. Why? Because people know everybody and there's reputationalism. There's all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I tell a joke where I say somebody says, you know, we're so shocked by this in a white community, but if somebody does something crazy on our street, go start talking to the neighbors. They'll be like, no, actually, you know, we're not surprised. Mustafa has been talking about doing this for like 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
We are surprised it took this long before he did it. Okay. Like no one's surprised.
We told the police.
Yeah. Everyone's in everyone's business.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
it's true.
I mean, you know, such a good neighbor. I haven't seen him for 5 years. If Khadija doesn't see Fatima over here for like 35 minutes, she calls the cops. Hey, I think she's dead. Somebody come over. She's supposed to be smoking on the front porch. So,
it's
you know,
true.
I always tell the difference.
There's a breakdown of community in America.
Yes. And white America, especially.
White America, especially.
And I tell this.
Which is the oldest.
Yeah, of course.
They're
the original invaders. So I always tell everybody the difference. I break down the difference like this. If you live in Dearborn and you don't have money to pay your groceries that week, you can go down to the grocery store and say, "Hey, Abu Hassan, I don't have money to pay." And he'll say, "No problem. Take whatever you need." And he knows that you're going to be good for it. Because if you're not good for it, your uncle will be good for it. Or your dad will be good for it. Or your cousin will be good for it. Because everybody knows everybody. And now, everybody in the neighborhood might know that Mike is broke and he can't buy his groceries. Like, the gossip will get around. But guess what? You won't be hungry.
Yeah.
You won't be hungry.
That's true.
Okay. If a white kid has a drug problem, his parents will try to help him. And then when their help doesn't work, they say, "All right, get out of here. You're messing up our life. You get out of the house." Now, if an Arab kid has a drug problem, his parents try to help him. And when their help doesn't work, they say, "You're never leaving this house. Go upstairs to your room. You could be 30 years old. You're never leaving." Now, I don't know if either solution is really good from like a medical point of view, but one of them means you lose, but our solution means you lose your privacy. And the other solution means you could end up dead in a crack house and nobody knows you're dead.
Sure.
Okay. That kind of loneliness.
Sure.
You know, I was walking around, I was in Seattle a few years ago doing a comedy festival or doing an Arab festival. And there was a girl from Gaza who was there. Okay. And she was visiting from Gaza, visiting America for the summer. And we're walking, and Seattle has a terrible homelessness problem, like LA, okay? And we're walking around, and she sees all this homelessness, and she says, "What is this? This is disgusting." I said, "What's disgusting?" She says, "All of this homeless. How do you let that happen?" And it hit me right there. She's from Gaza, okay? Yeah. It's the most densely populated open-air prison on planet Earth. 40% poverty, 60% unemployment. Yeah. But guess what they don't have? Homelessness.
Yeah.
Because the culture doesn't allow that. In Dearborn, Dearborn has people who don't have a lot of money, but you don't see homeless people. People sleep somewhere. So because if you are my cousin, if you're my fifth cousin and you don't have a place to stay, you're staying with me. Because if anyone knows that you're related to me and you're out on the street, that's a shame on me. Why didn't you take him
in?
That
is true.
Okay. That is a beautiful thing about our culture. No privacy. There's no such thing as privacy.
Sure.
But there is this communal thing of hugging people and you know, that is something that is rampant. This loneliness is rampant in white society and in American society, and it makes its way in other parts of American society too, but especially white society. And that is another reason that we have all these mass shootings. The guns are one reason, but the other thing is cultural. You're on your own. You know, I mean, white parents brag about kicking their kids out when they're 18. It's like on every American TV show. When he's 18, I'm getting him out of the house.
Yeah, but there's something good about that, though.
No, there isn't.
There needs to be a balance.
Okay.
I think there's a bad side with the Arab side where it's like, "Yeah, stay at home, no problem. You're a good son."
Yeah, but
till you're 45, don't matter.
Okay, but let me tell you something.
As long as your mother alive, you are helping your mother. You're checking her sugar.
Yeah, but
it's okay. You live in the basement. You are a loser.
Yeah, but
you can drive my Lexus, and you can tell all the women it's your Lexus.
Right, but listen. Do you know why? When you talk to realtors in Dearborn, who deal with Arab clients and especially young Arab clients, right after they get married to buy a house.
Yeah.
These 30-year-old Arab guys that are getting ready to buy a house. Guess what? Sometimes they're buying their house cash. Or putting a huge down payment on their house where the white American customers aren't able to do that. You know why?
Family money.
No, because that Arab kid, he's a professional. He might have even become a doctor, but he's living at home with his mom and he's not paying a mortgage on another house until he gets married.
That's how I started my real estate.
Exactly. So you
when I got out of the Marine Corps, I got a job with Detroit Diesel because Detroit Diesel Engines was inside the armored vehicle. Right. I was a mechanic on.
And where'd you live?
I was at my mom's house.
That's right.
Piling up money.
That's right.
Working double time.
That's right.
Extra time.
So our
Christmas.
So this culture of stay living with your mom helped you build wealth.
Build wealth.
Quicker than if you weren't.
And I wasn't even trying.
Right.
I wasn't even trying.
So, I mean, we can shit on, not shit on it. We can say good and bad.
This is that my mom was like, "You stay home."
Yeah. Listen,
well, I'm like, "Ma, I just got out of the Marines." Marines, whatever.
I'm 45, man. My mom still wants me to move back home, you know? But there's something
it's
beautiful
in our
about
culture
this.
That's okay with that. And I tell my white friends, I remember one of my buddies, a comic, was like, "Yeah, I'm gonna go move back with mom back home. I'm gonna work a lot and stuff, and I'm gonna try to pile some money." And I'm like, "That's some Arab shit right there. That's good."
But he's just getting it.
No, but he's getting it. Well, at first he felt defeated. He was like, "Man, I gotta go home," or whatever. But then he thought about it. He's like, "But at the same time, I should be able to stack money." And then I told him, I was like, "That's how I started my real estate, bro."
Right.
But it was by accident. I was just making all this money, staying with my mom.
I know. It wasn't by accident,
though. 2-3 years.
It wasn't by accident.
And then I get laid off, and then I'm like, I got $300,000 in the bank. What do I do with this money?
Well, I mean, starting the business was by accident, but
having the money to have the idea to do real estate.
Yeah, but having the money wasn't an accident. Having the money was a product of our culture. If you were white, there's a good possibility that you would have lived outside the house. Maybe you would have already bought a house, had a mortgage, you already been in a lot of debt. And when you lost your job with Detroit Diesel, it might have been a disaster. Sure. Or you might have blown your savings in a year or two. And you wouldn't have even had the balls or the capital to say, let's go start a business.
You know what's crazy is that now that I think about it, those 2.5 years that I got out of the Marines, stayed with my mom, and was making money that you have to buy a house. You have to be like, you have to have kids now, like that type of money.
Right.
And the fact that I didn't do that, it's amazing. Like, when I look back at it, I'm like, that's definitely part of our culture. Of and it wasn't even something I was thinking about.
Well, of course, it's subliminal to us. You know, it's subconscious to us. But when I watch TV, when I watch TV and you see these whites, we grew up with these white sitcoms, and there's
make
just
sure
always
the microphone on you. I'm afraid that you're not.
Sorry, we grew up with these white.
You can hold it. You know that, right? Okay, fine. You don't want to.
We grew up with these white.
What's wrong? You don't want to make it look like you're eating dicks or something. You have a hard time? Oh no, don't do that.
What? I can't put it here.
I'm just afraid if you put it there, it's not going to sound that good.
Okay, fine.
I mean, so, that's what it's made to do. But I'm
That's why it has a clip.
Okay, so let's do it. I hate that thing. It looks so stupid with the clip.
Well, it doesn't look stupider than fucking holding it.
No, it looks better holding it. Now I look like... Now you got to have the microphone facing up on me.
Okay. So when you watch these...
How does this sound, guys? Does it sound like shit or what?
Actually, just message if you can't hear us. You know, message... Are you seeing comments, live comments online?
Yeah.
Okay. So if it's a problem hearing us, let us know.
Is it better or worse?
But... Or the same. So... So when you grow up in America, you see all these sitcoms, these white sitcoms are like, you know, when he turns 18, he's getting out of here. Okay. How does our culture, Arab culture, any like non-white culture? Okay. In 2004 or something, George Bush, remember there was a big piece of legislation called No Child Left Behind, the No Child Left Behind Act.
Yes, I remember. Okay.
I think other cultures look at us and be like, wait, you're leaving your children behind? You need to pass a law that says no children left behind?
This is not just common sense?
Yeah, right.
What are you talking about?
That's a problem for you? Yeah. You know, like...
You actually have to write these things down. Is this every morning you have to wake up and put it on your to-do list? Number one, don't leave my child behind. I cannot... Forget that one.
Right? I mean, it's...
Because I just might leave her at the target.
It's unbelievable that a society that says, this is the best country on the planet in the history of the world. You ever hear that? This is the best country in the history of the world. Had to pass a law called No Children Left Behind. And that was a fucking debate. Like, it was a debate. Come on.
It is true, man. We do have a major breakdown in community, and a lot of it is individualism, but now it's exacerbated on another level. That's on a level that's just more concentrated than ever.
Well, yeah, social media, because now everybody believes they can become famous, you know, real quick on social. You know, get these, you know, people all of a sudden had 100,000 followers on Instagram for doing nothing.
Yeah,
you know, and yes, there's that too, but that's global too. But there's just something about this American, it's lonely. People call it individualism, but most of the time it just becomes loneliness.
Well, I mean, it's part of it.
Yeah.
You know, you're on your own.
Yeah.
You're going to have to pick yourself up by your bootstraps.
Right. And if you ask your parents for help, that's like...
A loss.
I mean, come on now.
A loss.
I mean, come on.
I had that in me.
Yeah.
I had that in me, instilled in me.
Was that instilled in the military?
And kind of my dad a little bit. My dad had a little bit of this pride of like...
Sure.
You should be able to do this shit on your own, motherfucker. Right. You know what I mean? Which is also really good.
Sure.
Right? But the balance wasn't there. My mom was on the other side of the Arab spectrum. My mom was on the side of like, anything you need, come.
Right.
We have, my brother will give you money and this, that, if you need whatever.
Right. Well, look,
I couldn't wrap my mind around that because I did have this individual's mindset. I'm not going to do this by myself.
Right.
And I don't think I actually excelled my real estate to the level it did until I actually said, you know what? If I could buy a house and my mom matches it with me together, why don't I just double the effort?
Right.
And she's like, sure.
Right.
And I'm just like, this is the best thing. I should have done this earlier.
Right. And it's not, look, what I'm sort of advocating for, this communalism, and I'm still believe totally in capitalism. I still believe totally in, it's not the opposite of independence. You can still be independent, have your own, but there's something beautiful about that community thing. Like in our culture, look, if I ran out of money, and I went to ask somebody other than my dad for that money, and my dad ever found out that I asked somebody other than my dad, he'd kill me. You know, like my dad has said to me many times, you ever need money, you come to me first. Now, part of that is I'm your dad, I want to protect you. But part of that is also like, listen, no one in the community can know that it's okay if you're broke, but nobody can know that you ask somebody else for money other than your parents. You come and ask me for money, I'm your dad. You know, this kind of stuff. And that's not true as much in white America. Everyone's on their own, you know?
Some white Americans.
Sure, of course there's exceptions.
But we are talking about that general middle America.
Just even like WASPy. I grew up in it. I grew up in WASPy white America.
But yeah, but then if you go south, I think that changes a bit.
A little bit.
I notice when you go down south, the white people there have very old school mannerisms. They're all about family.
Yeah.
They really stick together. They help each other out. They share resources. They live off the land. Living off the land also gives them this idea. So you see people in the south, especially in the deep, deep south, especially if you go even like down to Louisiana, down in the swamps.
Yeah.
You know, those people there have a real, real, real amazing sense of community. I think for us as Americans, we're thinking of it from a metropolitan mindset. I don't think
part of it, but
I don't think I don't think it's fair to say that white people are like that. I think it's so easy for us to say that because we see white people in cities being like that. I don't know if in the rural area, white people are a little
bit more. Yeah, but the vast majority of Americans live in urban and suburban areas. You know, rural America is not that populated. It's there's a lot of people there, but the vast majority.
But I think they
one third of Americans live from Boston to New York.
They still have community though.
Some do.
And you'll see that in conservative circles too, man, where they really have old school values and like, you know.
Well, again, these social values is not the same as communalism. It's not the same as we protect everybody. At community over individual. You can be conservative and have family values, whatever that means. But I never understood what family values means to conservatives. I mean, it means no abortions, and it means but it doesn't mean like no divorce and cheating. I mean, they do that kind of shit all the time, just like everybody. I'm saying just like everybody. But I'm saying this talk about family values and the
like
conservative.
Arabs found the best way to be like cheating on us, six wives.
Yeah, that's legal.
Figure it out, bro.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, there's a lot of hypocrisy to it, especially in politics. I mean, look, you know, I mean, am I supposed to really take a conservative family values pro-life person seriously who says, you know, an unborn child has, you know, I'm going to protect everything about an unborn child, and a woman has to be forced to have that baby. And then at the same time they say, but if you commit murder, it's okay if we kill you. I mean, come on now. You know, this is not a protection of like at least the Catholic Church. I have a little respect for them. I mean, not in everything, but they're staunchly pro-life and they're staunchly anti-death penalty. At least that's consistent.
Yeah, that is, there's a consistency.
Okay, at least there. That's consistent. Yeah. You know, but
it's just like in the end, man, it's like I always look at it like this, you know, liberals want to kill the baby in the womb and like conservatives want to kill babies in Yemen. You know, it's just like we're all like killing babies. We're just choosing which side do we want to kill the baby? Do we want to kill the baby before it's here or after it's here?
Well, I don't think it's fair to say liberals.
Do you want it medium rare or well done? Right.
Well, I don't think it's fair to say liberals want to kill the baby in the womb. Liberals say that that's not, you know, that the woman has a choice to decide what she wants to do about her. For instance, you know, I'll just say as a man, the idea, I don't think I've ever gotten anyone pregnant. But if I did get someone pregnant and she said to me, what do you think? And even let's say she had the idea of she wants to abort the baby. I'm sitting here now saying my instinct would be to say, no, I don't want you to have an abortion. I want you to have this baby. Even if we're not going to be together, even if we're going to be living on other sides of the world, whatever. I want you to have this baby because the idea of abortion is really very, very uncomfortable to me.
For sure.
But I also want to live in a world where that's her choice.
That's a choice. Exactly.
It's not my choice. It's her choice. But I wouldn't want it to happen.
I know.
You know?
It's a
So it's not like people like nobody's
though.
Pro-abortion, I don't think.
Yeah, well, you know? I mean, I don't think Republicans are pro blowing up Yemenis. I think they're pro keep these gas prices down. So okay. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, it's like on the other side of the spectrum.
Well, that's
saying,
fine. But one is about bodily autonomy and one is about corporate greed. I mean, you know, bodily autonomy means this fetus might die for the
listen,
interest
bro,
of bodily autonomy.
Listen, bro, gas prices go up to fucking $50 a gallon, forget about body autonomy, bro. Everyone's raping you. You're getting raped on every fucking angle through every fucking orifice.
Yeah, I mean, you know. What's annoying as an Arab is that when gas prices are high, everybody picks on us. And when gas prices are low, nobody says thank you. Nobody says great job.
Yeah, for pumping it all out.
Yeah, like, nobody says great job.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, you know, when it's high, they get mad at us.
Exactly. I mean, I don't know about you, man. After this, I got to go pump oil for the fucking Americans, man. It's fucking part of my, that's how I get these fucking guns.
That's right.
Pumping oil like the old little, remember those old water pumps at the park?
Yeah.
Hemlock Park, we used to have that pump that was next to a well.
Yeah, right? everything was mechanical, bro. You got to build up
that?
The pressure. Yeah.
Remember that?
Of course.
And then, like, you drink the water and it would taste like rust.
Yeah.
But it was still good.
Of course it's good. It builds up your immunity.
Something about that, the minerals in there tasted really good.
Builds up your immunity.
But I think those minerals are important.
Of course. Why are these kids allergic to everything today? Because they're not drinking out of the hose. Yeah. Drink out of the hose, you're not going to be allergic to shit.
I know, right?
These kids today, I'm wearing them. Celiac disease.
Bro.
You're allergic to cereal?
Bro.
I mean.
My buddy Trix is hilarious. He has this tag in one of his jokes about like weak white people. And he's like, just fucking throw peanuts at him.
Yeah, peanut allergy. I never heard about
it.
I never heard of that. Until I got older, I was like, oh, whatever.
Technically, Trey says, if you don't want a woman to have an abortion, don't get one pregnant.
Whatever. Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Such a silly thing. Who
says that? She's just being.
It's a silly thing. I'm not trying, you know.
She watches
I've never
show.
Have, but I mean, I will, you know.
Okay, well, you enlightened me to this video.
Does that mean
video.
Don't have sex? You know, I don't know.
You know, before that, I did want to talk about guns because we talked about guns the other night with the waitress at Mango's. She had a Smith & Wesson shirt on.
Yeah.
And then we talked about it. And turns out she's a gun enthusiast. She has a gun and her family are
gun enthusiast. She has a gun.
She has a gun. No, but I mean, she knows the gun. She goes to the range often.
Yeah, she seems pretty educated.
She's a pretty educated gun owner. You know, her whole family, her mom and everyone's like, hey, you know, get a gun. We're going to teach you how to shoot a gun. Don't be afraid of the gun, whatever.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you added some disagreements. Like, you know, you're like, you know, and this goes back to earlier what you said. You'd like to live in a world with less death and destruction. I think you're very sensitive to like what's happening. And as we all should be, like with the school shootings and these mass shootings and how easy it is to kill people with these weapons of war these like these actual tools that are designed specifically to kill human life, you know what I mean? And I know that, you know, and like I swallow the red pill. I know what a gun is. I'm not going to sit there and be like, oh no, sports and fucking we're just shooting paper. You know, this thing's designed specifically to fucking make it very easy to kill people. It's almost like Patrice O'Neill's bit about being vegetarian, where he's like, if I had to get a hamburger and you told me I had to go kill this cow and you gave me a gun and you were like, you got to go shoot this fucking cow.
Right.
And then he acts out, the cow's like chewing and he's like, I'm going to eat an apple.
Right.
Right. So it's almost the same way. Like if you gave me a gun to kill someone, it'd be much easier to do it than instead of giving me a knife and going walk up to that person and stab them to death, you know?
Sure.
So I get that. But at the same time, it's like I have this disconnect with people on the other side who are sensitive about the thing and want guns to disappear. And they act as if we can debate that guns are going to disappear and they're not going to.
Well, I mean, you know, to me, my viewpoint on it is not based in like necessarily based in like and I'll admit it's not based like in reality or anything like that. It's based in like
emotion.
And what I'd like to see, you know, idealism. It'd be great if there were no guns.
Bro.
And people say, but I need my gun to protect my... But no, I'm talking about if there was no guns.
I wish there
zero.
Were no guns.
Okay, zero. Okay, like, and people always go back to this conservatism and the founding fathers. The founding fathers were talking about muskets. They never thought that there was going to be a revolver, let alone a fucking semi-automatic handgun.
I'm pretty sure people at that time with technology can extrapolate that we're going to
I don't know.
Continuously get to a...
Well, I don't know. Even at this point in America, we pass laws and then we reassess the laws when technology changes the times. We reassess them. Okay?
I think right now the changes are way more drastic because technology is becoming more exponential.
So let's talk about these things. I mean, look, when you really go back as a lawyer and a law professor, when I look back at the people always talk about the founding fathers this and the founding fathers that. When you look back and you think to yourself, all right, these were a bunch of they created something historic, no question about it. There's some good ideas in there.
But they were white!
No, they weren't just white. They were white. But slavery, slavery was written into the Constitution. And the idea of white supremacy was written into the Constitution. And they believed in all of that stuff. And slavery, when you go back and you think and you understand that slavery was treated as a legitimate corporate exercise in the founding documents of this country, then it wouldn't be that crazy to come to a conclusion that says, you know what, maybe we should throw it all out and start all over. Like, if that's what it started on, right? They wrote black people are three-fifths of a person. They wrote that Indians, which is a mistaken identity anyway, that Indians should not be given any rights at all, right? Women were not allowed to vote till 1920. Black people weren't even people under the Constitution till 1865. And we're talking about these guys back in 1770 like they were a bunch of forward-thinking geniuses? No, they weren't. We have to stop this romantic... Like, you know, there's nothing else about 1775 you'd like to keep today. But for some reason, this piece of paper that these guys wrote is sacred.
You don't think the piece of paper is great at all?
There's good ideas in there, okay? There's obviously good ideas.
You think we should start all over again?
I think we could start all over, keep a lot of the good ideas, and have a constitution. You know that we
have how much killing would have to happen?
Why? You know a lot.
Hey, let's get rid of this, okay? Keep the good ideas. As soon as you said that, guns are going off, bro. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but a woman not having an abortion is a good idea.
But the majority of Americans don't agree with that.
Doesn't matter. I'll kill you.
It does.
You see what I'm saying? That's where we're at right now.
But it does matter. Like, you know that a lot of countries have constitutional conventions. Like, every certain amount of years, they elect people who get together and reassess the constitution of their country.
Like what type of countries?
I think in Chile, they just had a constitutional referendum.
That's not
a
piece of shit.
A lot of places in Tunisia, they just had a constitutional referendum. And a lot of places they have. Tunisia, Chile. Okay. I'm not saying they always make great decisions, but at least they reassess this constitution. They go, okay, but they don't treat it like some sacred document down from God. This was a bunch of 35-year-old, mostly slave owners who wrote this thing, who believed that white people were better than black people. Like, they believed that. And they were, you know, the whole reason we're white.
Would it be hard not to believe that at that time?
It doesn't matter.
But it not matter?
Blaming them for believing it. I'm just saying, although we could blame them for believing it, but I'm saying it's 2022 and that's what they believed back then. So we don't like, I mean, in no other thing do we keep the same methodologies from 1776. No one said, you know, okay, I don't know when they first discovered penicillin, but they first discovered penicillin, I don't know, 100 years ago, 150 years ago, I don't really know. Okay. But I'm sure they're not making it the same way today as they were making it 150 years ago. Okay? Everything advances, and so should our founding documents and our Constitution. Doesn't make any sense. You know, we can reassess these things. These guys, the reason that Arabs are white is because white supremacy and white nationalism is built into the founding of this country. When they first created the Naturalization Act, the first one that decided how you become a citizen in 1790, one of the rules of how you become a citizen was that you had to be white. That was written into the law. The law said you had to be white in order to become an American. And that was the law from 1790 until 1952.
Really?
Yes. You had to be white in order to become an American citizen. And now we say, okay, well, we stopped that, so everything's okay. No, there's all these legacies of this shit that you have to, like, reassess. There's a lot of fucked up shit. You have to go back and say, wait, you know, if those were the rules, then maybe we should reassess some things. The same thing with the Constitution. The Constitution was written with these ideas in place. And so maybe you can go back and look at it and be like, okay, you know, maybe we can reassess some of this shit. Maybe it's not holy. It's not sacred just because it was written by these guys in Philadelphia.
Do you still think there is systemic racism in the law? like this idea that the law is still has racist things in it. Because I think people throw the word systemic racism out and it's too broad now. Like people just call anything systemic. But the idea of systemic racism is that, you know, like that, like from 1790 to the 1950s, that's a systemic type of systematic racist thing that's in there.
So I think there's a difference between...
You being a law professor, is there still some of that
stuff? So I think there's a difference between saying that there's systemic racism and saying that there's formal racism. Okay, saying you have to be white in order to become a citizen—that's definitely formal racism. Okay, formal and as like it's explicitly written in front of your face. Formal racism, and that creates for a long time systemic racism. And so, in as much as a law or the law doesn't try to actively undo the damage of the formal racism, then yes, systemic racism continues to exist. Let me explain it like this. Let's say you encounter a man who's 60 years old, okay? And he's 60 years old because he's 60 years old and he's 500 pounds. And why is he 500 pounds? Because he's been eating donuts 3 meals a day for every day of his life, okay? And so he's become 500 pounds. Now, why does one eat donuts, Mike? Because donuts are delicious.
Delicious.
They're delicious. So you want to eat them as much as you can, but they have this effect, okay? So he's blown up to 500 pounds. At the age of 60, he goes to visit his doctor. His doctor says, hey, man, you're going to die the next year. Right. And so he makes the decision right there, says, cold turkey, I'm going to stop eating donuts. And he does. He stops eating donuts. What's going to happen? He's going to lose weight, okay? He's going to become a little bit healthier. But he's going to have stretch marks. He's still going to have a lot of those health conditions and clogged arteries from when he was eating donuts for 60 years. It doesn't just disappear. He's probably still going to live a shorter life than he would have if he didn't eat donuts every day for 60 years. Okay,
his joints are probably...
Lingering health problems, lingering bone problems. And so, yes, he stopped eating donuts. He stopped doing that bad thing.
And he's losing weight.
Yeah. But he's never going to get to his ideal weight, though. He's never going to get to a healthy weight because his body's still going to be fucked up. He's going to have stretch marks everywhere.
He's not going to have abs.
Right. And so all of the legacy of eating those donuts for 60 years doesn't just go away. It's a slow process, and it might not ever go away, and you still might have the health problems. Now, you might have removed the formal part of it. You stopped eating donuts. But is ending the eating of donuts enough? No. His doctor or somebody else might say to him, yeah, it's good that you stopped eating donuts. But guess what? You should also exercise a little bit every day. And now you should start doing active things to try to reverse all this shit that did. Not just stopping the bad thing, but actively do things to reverse the stuff.
Plastic surgery, tummy tuck.
Whatever.
Fucking running.
Drink a lot more water.
Better lifestyle.
Right.
No yo-yo dieting.
Right. Just the end of donuts doesn't really solve the problem. There'll be some benefits that come from it, but it doesn't really solve the problem. And it's not going to lengthen your life than if you stop eating donuts and exercise and drink more water and blah, and. Okay? So that's the way you have to look at it.
So there may not be systemic racism within the system.
There might not be formal racism anymore. But the legacies of that, the systemic racism is much more about legacy and about the things sort of built into the system. So for instance, you could say there's still systemic racism because for a long time in America, black people weren't people, they were property, okay, for the first 300 years that Americans were here, or 250 years that Americans were here. They were a property. And then after that, there was Jim Crow for another 100 years after slavery, right? So, and there was redlining, and black people couldn't buy houses, sure, and all this kind of stuff. Now, a lot of white people in this country have generational wealth mainly because of real estate, land and houses passed down. This creates generational wealth. And so they have more wealth than their families generationally, which black people never had. Okay, so you can immediately say, okay, no more slavery, no more Jim Crow, racism in housing and property is now illegal. Great. Okay, you've ended the formal part of it. Have you solved all the problems that existed because of that systemic racism for a long time? No. And in as much as you're not actively trying to, one might say, well, I mean, maybe the best way to solve that systemic racism problem is find every person who's a descendant of a slave owner, owned these plantations, and find the descendants of the slaves that worked there and give them half the land.
Reparations.
Well, whatever you want to call it. But maybe that, maybe then you'd be tackling the systemic racism problem. But you can't just say, okay, we stopped slavery, but all the gains for 250 years that that person got from slavery, that's okay. They can keep that. We're stopping the bad thing. Oh, okay, well, it doesn't work like that, right? I mean, we don't think about that in crime. If you're embezzling money for years and years and years, and they say to you, and then the cops say, hey, embezzling is bad. You can't just say, oh, okay, cool, awesome. No, no. You go to jail, right? You can't just say, I'm going to stop. Well, but that's what we did with slavery and the building of wealth of other people. We said to them, you got to stop. And they still weren't happy about it, but they said, okay, we'll stop. Did they give any of it back? Did they do anything? I mean, you know, maybe
there's a statistic, like so many percentage of like the really big legacy corporations are here because
all the tobacco fields, all the tobacco owners,
cotton.
All these things. I mean, these are still, agriculture is still one of the biggest industries in America, and especially in the South, right? And those things were.
So, do you think the solution is reparations?
Look,
right now, man, the solutions that we've been trying to put in place, welfare and all this stuff,
look, man,
to me, coddles.
Well, welfare
coddles them. The people more than it does help.
Well,
you know, it like
welfare is not about solving racial problems. Remember, there's more white people on welfare than there are black people on welfare. Welfare is about poverty. But affirmative action now, and look, affirmative action only says we recognize 350 years of slavery and Jim Crow, and so as a way to try to solve that a little bit, we're going to tell black kids who graduate from high school that you get a little bump when you're going to go to college. And white America went wild. Just that little thing. Let me tell you something. If they let every black kid in America who graduates from high school with a 2.0 average free tuition to Harvard and Yale and Columbia for the next 50 years, that might put a dent into the systemic racism that's fucked over black people for 350 years. It might put a little dent into it. Like, that's how much this country owes black people. And I'm just talking about black people. That's how much it owes them. If they let everyone in to every Ivy League college for free for the next 50 years, maybe that would put a dent into it. That's how much this country owes. And we're going to argue about affirmative action. You know, we're going to argue about whether or not every black person in America got a check for $500,000 from the government, that still wouldn't solve, that still wouldn't be paid. I mean, like what they did was unbelievable to generations and tens of millions of people. Tens of millions of people. And America has never formally apologized for slavery. The Congress has never said this was wrong. I mean, they never said like we apologize, because they're afraid if we say we apologize, that might come with accountability. But they don't want any accountability. They want to keep the spoils of that. And then white people are going crazy and white guys, oh, we're losing our country. White guys are losing our country. White guys are about 33% of the American population. Less, they're about 30% of the American population. They're still like 75% of the senators. They're still like 75%. They're doing just fine. Okay? They're still 44 and a half presidents. You know, like they're doing just fine. Okay, they're doing. Or 45. 40, counting Biden. 45. Okay,
I'm gonna grab some water.
Okay,
they're you doing. Want another water?
No, I'm good. They're doing just fine, and we have to hear this complaint. Oh my God, we're losing our country, and oh my God, my favorite word. Do you know what do white people call racism against white people? They call it reverse racism. No one's ever broken down this idea. They don't call it racism. They call it reverse racism. Now, why in the world would you call it? There's only one reason to call it reverse racism. Because you know what forward racism is, because you invented it. It's what you did for a long time. And so when it happens to you, you say this is reverse.
What kind of upside down world shit is this?
Yeah, it's kind of like saying, well, wait a minute, what do you mean? No, racism is supposed to be when white people discriminate against black people. That's okay. You can't do reverse racism. No, reverse. That's wrong.
So okay. What's the idea that racism cannot be white people cannot be racist towards black people?
What do you mean? You mean black people can't be racist towards white people?
I mean, yeah, black people
can't
be racist towards white people because white people are in power and that racism is supposed to...
Yeah, because you know,
there's a difference between that and prejudice.
Yeah, so the way we define racism...
And I think a lot of people use the word racism wrong.
Yeah, sure, they use it...
I know I have.
I mean, the way we define racism in the law and in critical race theory is that racism is the intersection of prejudice and power. So you have prejudice and you use that power to implement it. And we understand that sort of implicitly in the history of America. You know, we can't just say every race, if you replace a race with any other race in a certain situation, we think about it the same. No, that's not true. If you were sitting on your porch and a parade came down the street, and as it got closer, you saw this called the Arab Pride Parade, you say, okay, cool. If a parade came close down the street, you said, oh, it's called the Black Pride Parade, you say, okay, cool. If it came closer and you say it's called the White Pride Parade, you go, oh, wait a second, white, because there's a different, something different historically, a different historical connotation about that. Whoa, white pride means something different. It comes with violence of the majority against the minority. That's and you start to get uneasy. I've tried this before in a comedy club. If you get in a comedy club, and I've tried this before, try it one time. Let's say you have two shows in one night, okay? Start the first show and say, hey, everybody, good evening. I hate black people. Okay. Now, I'll tell you what's going to happen. The crowd is going to get real uneasy.
Depending on what type of crowd is it. We're talking about a white crowd?
Any crowd. Most crowds. People are going to get uneasy, okay? You as a non-black person. I mean, if you're a black person, it'd be different. But you as a non-black person. People are going to get uneasy. People are going to get all bent out of shape. Some people might leave. Some people might boo. It's going to be very, very, very uneasy. But if you get on stage and you say, hey, everybody, good evening. I hate white people. What do people do, Mike?
They clap.
They laugh or clap.
Yeah.
Why? Because the idea is so absurd and it doesn't come with any sort of like historical like violence or whatever that people laugh at it.
That's kind of changing, though.
No, it's not. No, it's not. Yeah, it people, no, it's not. Maybe you're just trying to be contrarian, but no, it's not. Mm. It's not changing. And why? Because somebody, if you say, I hate black people, they know that that might come with some level of like violence or organized violence or systemic racism. If you say, I hate white people, people look at you and go, okay, yeah, so what are you going to do about it? How can you mess up a white guy's day for being white? You know?
Well, it's been happening a lot.
No. You're buying into some of this. Prejudice is not the same as racism. And prejudice is wrong, too.
Sure.
And discrimination of any kind based on race is wrong. But it's not the same as racism. Okay? You and I are Arab. We're not white. We don't think of the world the same way. An Arab guy might help his nephew by getting him a job at the mobile. A white guy helps his nephew by getting him a job at mobile. Okay? It's different. It's way different.
I don't know, man. I mean, I just think that I think if you're almost splitting hairs where it's almost like it's not even like worth noting how, you know, white people are being kind of like, because there's an anxiety that's happening with white people that's always been there, but now it's ever more so because the lens is now on them. Right. So like back in the day, the media, the focus really was painting us after 9/11, Arabs, that is, you know, as being public enemy number one. Mm-hmm. Then now, you know, the narrative has changed. The news has always does that throughout cycles. It goes and goes, okay, what group can we parade and be like, that's the bad guy so that we can just get you focused on that fucking shit. Mm-hmm. Right. And right now, it's, you know, white people. Like, I have that joke. You turn on the news now, and who's the bad guy? White people, white people, white people, white people, white people.
Yeah, but...
And, like, right now, it's, like, it's getting to a point where it's, like, anything you do... And it's making white people uneasy. And I'm seeing parallels between that and what kind of, like, Arabs have to deal with Listen, I'm not saying, like, what they're going through is a much cuter version of what we're going through.
Right.
Right. But I'm talking about... It's still very interesting to see how the media has flipped its fucking lens.
I don't think it has flipped its lens.
Sure,
Listen, white supremacy. Here's the difference: terrorism or Islamic extremism becomes the responsibility of every Arab and Muslim to carry in America.
Okay, sure. That's how it was painted.
But it becomes that. Why? Because it translates into policy. It translates into stronger restrictions on immigration, stronger restrictions at the border, the Muslim ban, these kinds of things. But white supremacy has never been seen, even when white supremacy was the norm among white people, and I'm not saying it's the norm among white people anymore, But white supremacy as a minority movement within the white community, just like Islamic extremism is a minority movement within the Muslim community, white supremacy is never seen as the responsibility of white people. People ask me all the time when I'm on, when they say, okay, Amr, you say you're not white and white people aren't white, okay, or Arabs aren't white. What's white? I tell them, okay, is it like being European? Maybe. Is it being Christian? Maybe. But here's what it really, here's what I really know it is. Being white means that nobody cares that you're white. It means your race doesn't follow you. It means that you especially can't mess it up for other white people. So if you go to a comedy club, Mike, and you're an Arab and you do a really terrible job, you might mess it up for the next Arab that wants to come into that comedy club. The comedy club manager will be like, no, we tried that one Arab guy. He wasn't funny. Okay. Or if you do really well, maybe you'll open the door for that other Arab kid. But that's not true with white people. There's a bunch of bad white comedians. It never hurts another white comedian that wants to come into a comedy club.
Because there's so many of them.
No, it's not. But there's not so many of them anymore. It's this idea that whiteness is the norm.
There is that, for sure.
It's the idea that whiteness equals...
your analogy, I don't think really...
Of course. Listen, again...
To me, that's more of a numbers thing.
It's not necessarily a numbers thing.
You see more white people than you see Arabs. And of course, that would make some people like focus on that one thing.
Right, but why do you see more white people? Like, white people are about 60% of the population. They're way more than 60% of stand-up comedians that I see on TV. Okay? They're way more 60% of stand-up comedians than comedy specials. Okay? It's normalizing that Americanness equals whiteness equals that's what the normal American thing is. And part of that is systemic racism by saying, back to the Naturalization Act, they could only become American if you were white. Okay? And so now this thing becomes normalized. And so white means that you don't speak for all white people. You only speak for yourself and you can't mess it up for other white people. So Barack Obama was the first black president. If Barack Obama had a scandal, like a real scandal.
Man, he couldn't do it.
If he had a scandal like a baby mama.
He took it out on Yemen instead.
If he had a scandal.
I wish he had one.
That's right. If he had a scandal, no other black person could ever become president again, ever. Okay? But George Bush started a fake war. And a million Iraqis died over a fake war.
Cheney started
the whatever fake war. Fine, Cheney and Bush. Bill Clinton got a blowjob every day in the White House from a 23-year-old.
Twice a day.
Okay. No one after these people did this. Nobody said, "Well, I guess we should watch out for Al Gore. He's white too." Nobody said, I guess we should watch out for John Kerry or John McCain. They're white too.
Because it hasn't been normalized. You're right. That's exactly what
it is. Okay, fine.
White was considered default.
Fine. Well, that's why it's different. That's why it never becomes attached to sort of, their race doesn't become attached to their actions. That doesn't happen. Yes, we talk about white supremacists, white nationalists, but we don't hold that against all white people.
That's why I get dismissed. That guy's just crazy.
Right. Crazy, deranged, delusional, distressed, depressed.
How Arabs say, he's just on drugs.
And then, when an Arab does something, what is it about his culture?
Sure.
And then everybody at the press conference, all these white journalists at the press conference become experts in the Arabic language. Did he yell anything in Arabic? Did he say Lakbar? You know, what did he say? Okay. Like, this is what happens, you know? So Barack Obama, as the black, had to be the perfect black guy, right? He went to Harvard, he went to Princeton, he had a wife, he had two kids, there was no scandals, nothing like that. Barack Obama, okay, imagine for a second that when you first heard about Barack Obama in 2004, 2006, whenever you heard of him, you heard that Barack Obama, this black guy who wants to become president, had 5 kids from 3 children, and he cheated on the first one with the second one, and then he cheated on the third one with a porn star and paid her $130,000 to shut the fuck up. Okay? Imagine if you heard that about, you would have never heard about Barack Obama, actually. Okay? He would be in the South Side of Chicago getting people out of parking tickets with his Harvard law degree. You would have never heard about him. But that is Donald Trump. That's exactly who Donald Trump is. That's the power of whiteness, okay? The power of your race, not, okay? Like, Barack Obama had to be the perfect, Barack Obama is like the Mitt Romney of black people. And Donald Trump is like the Flava Flav of white people, and he became president. It's not the same. You can't just replace white and black and say,
yeah, but it's,
you
know, only a matter,
oh, this
is
happening to white people too now. Maybe in 1,000 years, but not as long. Again, the donuts,
in
man.
In 5 years, bro, brown people are going to outfuck white people, man.
It's by 2042. Okay, here's another.
Damn, that long? 2042?
The Census Bureau has
Yemenis
said.
Yemenis are here now. I don't think that's going to speed up, bro.
Well, they're not counting them all yet. The Census Bureau has said.
Yeah, they're considered as Caucasian.
The Census Bureau has said that by 2042, white people will become less than 50%. And what's funny about that...
If you
that,
took Arabs out of it...
It could be like 2035, maybe. But
is that like... It, do we make up like 5% of the white number?
We don't know.
Less than that.
We don't even really know. But let me say this. A lot of white people read that projection by the Census Bureau, and they freak out. They go, oh my God, we're going to become a minority. Now, wait a minute. Mike, what would be the only reason... Why would you be afraid to become a minority in America? Well, maybe because you're white and you understand what happens to minorities in America. You know what you've been doing to minorities, and you're afraid that they're going to want to have payback. Otherwise, why would you be scared? Why would you worry about being less than 50%? Because you feel that all the non-white people are going to get together and they're going to decide what to do with us. But why? Why? Maybe because you've been fucking them over for a long time?
Bro, I had this old school Polish guy that lived next door to me. I respected and hated him at the same time. At first, it was nothing but respect. Then when I got to know him, I was like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
Old school Polish guy. Yeah. This was at a time when Obama was starting to run for president.
Oh.
Maybe like 2 years before, a year and a half before the actual election. And this guy beat cancer.
This is in California or here?
Here.
Okay.
In Dearborn.
Okay.
I had a house. When the market crashed, I bought a house for $30,000 in West Dearborn.
Okay.
And the next door neighbor was this Polish guy who built a house by himself, brick by fucking brick, bro. He beat cancer doing this.
Okay.
And he told me, he was like, doctor say I have 6 months to live. I tell him, you doctor, but he's supreme doctor.
Oh, he's like Polish from Poland.
He's
like,
oh, he's straight up Polish, old school Polish.
Okay.
Beats cancer, builds a house next to me. This guy, man, I swear to God, one day we're sitting there talking and... I was talking about women and getting women, and he was talking about how it was like back in the day and everything. And he goes, you don't know, you just take them.
You just take them.
I'm like, what do you mean you just take them? That's what I said. And he's like, yeah, you like the girl, you take her. And I'm like, oh, okay. So what you're saying is, like, yeah, be aggressive. Like,
right.
Talk to her, tell her, yeah, your mom want to take
assertive.
You up.
Yeah.
He's like, no, no. No, you take her. And I'm like, what do you mean, like, you take her? You take her and then, you know, you fuck her. I'm like, do you take her out to eat first? He's like telling me, no, you right. just, you rape her.
Right.
And he, at first I was like, this guy is going to come around and be like, ah, I got you. But no, he's like, you are a man.
Right.
This is what it is. You want a woman, you take her.
Right.
And I'm like, not in America, buddy. It doesn't work like that.
No,
but then he also, later on, when Obama was getting closer, he told me, he's like, Obama cannot be president. And I was like, why? He's like, me, you, slave. He believed that shit. And I think that fear is a real fear in like some... Well,
because they know what they did.
White people.
Because they know what they did.
And he just old school Polish.
Because they know what they did. This is the same reason Israelis are afraid of Palestinians. They're afraid of talking to us and sitting down with us. And they're afraid of giving us democracy because they know what they did. They know what they did to us. And they're afraid we're going to do the same thing to them. Okay? They know what they did. Okay? Like if you committed a terrible act of violence against somebody, okay? And then let me ask you this, Mike. If you committed a terrible act of violence against somebody.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden one day you hear a sound in your house and somebody's in your house, okay? And when you turn the lights on, it's that person holding a gun. Now, you're going to immediately be scared. You're going to immediately say, "Fuck, I'm done." Because you know what you did to that person. And now they're back to get you. Okay? If it was someone who you didn't know, you might be like, what are you doing here? You might talk them down. You might say, hey, I'm not the guy you want. Hey, you must be in the wrong house.
Instead,
that's not
me. Instead,
you'd
be like, this motherfucker.
Right. But if it's the person that you committed a terrible act of violence on, you go, well, okay. All right. Like, you know what you did. And they know what they did.
And they
except we're not going to do that. Palestinians, we're not going to try to kick them all out. And minorities in America, guess what? They're not going to try to kick out all the white people. They're not going to try to enslave all the white people. You know, white people in America should be happy that minorities in America, and especially black people, are only asking for equality and not revenge. They're just asking for equality, bro. But why do white people think equality means revenge? And why do white people think equality means that they have to lose something?
Do you think white people believe? They think it's just some white people believe.
I think a lot of white people believe that. And I think that you know, like, look, it's probably every time white people have let black people actually participate equally in like a meritocracy type thing, black people have kicked their ass. I mean, when they let black people start participating in sports, black people overtook everything. When they let black people start participating in music equally, black people overtook everything. Black people are only like 15% of the American population.
13.
Okay. And they overtook, and they let them start. I mean, you know, this is why they're scared to fully let them start playing hockey. Like, you know, they let them start playing baseball. And guess what?
Oh, man.
Jackie Robinson started stealing home.
If they start playing hockey, bro, there's going to be jump shots in hockey, bro. There's going to be all kinds of backflips. And
be a wrap. I mean,
the fights are going to be amazing.
I mean, it's can you imagine? And they let them start playing. Right when white people let black people start playing baseball, what happened? Jackie Robinson immediately started stealing home like every game. Okay, Hank Aaron immediately broke the home run record. You know, Hank, you know that Jackie Robinson came like in 1947 or 48. 25, 26 years later, Hank Aaron broke the all-time home run record. Like, Hank Aaron entered the league just a little bit after Jackie Robinson. And boom, he broke the all-time home run record. Okay? Willie Mays, the best player maybe ever. Okay? Ken Griffey. Barry Bonds hit more home runs than anybody. Okay? It's like, if I was white, I'd be freaked out too. Because you say, well, man, when we actually do level the playing field, look what fucking happens to us.
All right, I want to
We got to go.
I know, but off of what you said the other day, I found the video, and this video is perfect to go off of what you said, where it's like, you know, Israel knows what they did, so they got to go and resort to
bribery
tactics like this. And I'm going to show you a video right now of comedian Bobby Lee on Andrew Santino's podcast talking about his time going to Israel, and the Israeli government paid for his trip. And he said it was a free trip, but it really wasn't. So
Israeli government is flying out like celebrities for free out there to do a tour for free. And it's on the house. They fly you first class, the whole thing. And I go, it's free? And they go, yeah, it's not free. Because when you land there, they go, you have to every day tweet positive things
About Israel. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I just felt so uneasy about it. I don't know much about it. I just know that they're in conflict. But I did. I did what they said. It was just basically, you know, Palestinians. Israel's a beautiful country.
Yeah, that's probably true. That's true,
It though. Is true. But then it's like I had to tag the government in it or whatever.
Oh, that's crazy. The Israeli government?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. That's weird as shit.
Yeah. And it was just like every day it was just nonstop.
You were cucking for the Israeli government.
Yeah, but I wish I hadn't gone, really.
Yeah.
That's fucking dark, bro.
Listen, propaganda.
That's dark.
Listen, when
and
you...
And shameless and tacky. Sure. It's like... It's so tacky. Right. Like Las Vegas tacky.
Right. Listen, just peddling a
fake.
Peddling a lie costs a lot of money. You know, and so when you need to peddle a lie like the Israelis do, like, you know, we didn't really kick anybody out, this is whatever, blah, blah, blah. When you need to peddle that lie or cover up that lie, it costs a lot of money. You need to fly people out, all this kind of, you need and then you need to tell them to do all these kinds of things and basically bribe them to do these things. Look, the Israelis know what they did. And so they need American comedians. And thank God that Bobby Lee like told the truth about this thing, because there's probably dozens of American comedians who went on that same trip over the years and never said anything. And they just went there and did what they told them to do and took the money. So, you know, all props and love to Bobby Lee. And Bobby Lee, hey, come to Palestine, man. We'll take you to Palestine. Man. Just like me and Mike went to Palestine, we'll take you there.
That'd
and
be
you
great.
See authentic, the people who actually from
that land. I
don't
know if his anxiety will let him do it.
Yeah, right. And we're not going to ask you to tweet anything. If you want to tweet about what you see, good for you, you know, but we're not going to ask you to do anything. But this kind of thing, this propaganda, and thank God, look, the truth always, I do believe that the truth always comes to light. And the power of the truth is very strong, you know. Bobby Lee said this, and it may, Bobby Lee, I don't know if he knows this, he's now like a mini celebrity in Palestine. He's in all the social media in Palestine. That Bobby, a lot of them didn't know who Bobby Lee was before.
Now they do.
You know, now they do.
He's
know?
A funny motherfucker.
Yeah. The power of the truth is very, very strong. The power, I explain it like this on stage now. I say, look, 4 years ago in the American Congress, there's 435 members of the American Congress. 4 years ago, there was no Palestinians. Then in 2018, we elected Rashida Tlaib from here in Detroit. Now, one out of 435, only one out of 435. And this one woman made the pro-Israel lobby sort of reassess everything, that they came up with new plans. Why? They started having conferences. What do we do about Rashida? They started raising millions of dollars. We need to get rid of Rashida.
What?
Currently, they're supporting a candidate with millions of dollars to try to get rid of Rashida, and the elections are in 3 days. Now, why? Why would you be scared about one out of 435? Why? Well, you're scared out of 135. You're not scared of one out of 435 if you're strong. You're only scared out of one out of 35 if you're weak and you're fragile and you're insecure, because, you know, one person yelling the truth could bring it all down. You're very fragile, so you freak out. You can't even have one person telling the truth. This is why they always try to shut us up. They try to shut down my Twitter and Instagram. There's only one reason you try to shut up the other side. That's because you're lying. If you're not lying, you don't care what the other side says. Okay? Remember there was the guy last year during the stuff in Jerusalem. His name was Yaakov. You remember him? He made all the social media. He's the one that was taped in Jerusalem saying to the Palestinian woman, if I don't steal it, somebody else will.
Oh, yeah, but he's from New York.
He's from New York. He lives in a stolen house in Jerusalem. Now, I was in Jerusalem last year, okay? And I was sitting in front of those houses with these people. And I was sitting there and Yaakov walked out. And I fucking love Yaakov, okay? I mean, because this guy's told the truth about the way they really feel. And as Palestinians...
Who's Yaakov again?
Yaakov, that guy. If I don't steal it, somebody else will. That guy. Okay. The guy who said, the one from New York. Okay. Said, if I don't steal
you
it,
like
somebody
him.
Else. I like him because he uncovered their truth, yeah. Which they've been trying to steal or conceal for a long time with that shit like what Bobby Lee was talking
right.
about. That guy tells what they're really doing.
Yeah.
See, when I'm telling the truth, I want the other side to talk. I don't want them to shut up. I don't want them to shut up. I want them to talk. Please talk, because eventually you're gonna say the truth of what you're actually doing.
Especially now with social media.
Oh,
man.
I love that guy. I took my phone out right away. I told him thank you. He said, for what? I said, for being you. Okay, like I was starstruck. I call him Justin Bieber. That's how much I love him.
Yeah,
I love this guy. See, when you're telling the truth, you want the other side to talk. When you're lying, you want to shut up the other side to try to shut us up all the time. So this is the power of the truth. Here's another, the last example of the.
So wait a minute, you're saying that he's not afraid of the truth?
No, I'm saying when we're speaking the truth, okay. Yaakov basically said what we've been saying for 74 years,
sure.
That they're stealing our shit.
Right.
Okay? And he said, well, if I don't steal it, somebody else will steal it. The woman said to him, you're stealing my house.
I don't know.
And instead of saying what the polished Israeli government, oh, we're not stealing, this is under the law, and you know, this kind of shit slave owner said 300 years ago, he said, if I don't steal it, somebody else will. And we're like, yeah, bro. Yes, we know. That's the truth. See, I want them to speak their truth. I want them to speak it, because their truth is they're invaders and they're thieves and all this kind of stuff. Please speak your truth. I don't want you to lie. Don't lie.
Yeah.
Speak your truth. When you're telling the truth, you're not afraid of the other person telling the truth. Okay? That's what I'm talking about. And so that's the power of the truth. The power of Palestine is based in the truth. Like, this is the last example I'll give you. Okay. We're all familiar. There's a Lebanese Arab American actress. Her name is Mia Khalifa. Now, Mia Khalifa acts in a certain genre of movie.
What's up, Mia?
Yeah.
Let's crack in.
Now, 3 years ago, okay, now she stopped doing it and all that kind of stuff, and that's fine. Now, 3 years ago, if Mia Khalifa showed up to any Arab or Palestinian event, no one would want to take a picture with her. Everybody would say, Mia, you've shamed our culture, you shamed us, all this kind of stuff. We can't be seen with you. Then last year, during the stuff that was happening in Jerusalem and Sheikh Jarrah, Mia Khalifa was on Twitter and Instagram every day saying, free Palestine, save Jerusalem, save Sheikh Jarrah. She was using her social media platform to talk about justice for Palestinians. And now, if Mia Khalifa walked down the streets in Ramallah, everyone would want to take a picture with her. See, that's the power of the truth. We transformed a woman from a porn star into a freedom fighter. See, this is what truth can do. You know, listen, 2,000 years ago, the Bible says that Jesus saved a prostitute and brought her into the congregation.
No, they ripped that shit out, bro.
Whatever. It's what the Bible says.
It's not there anymore. Is it still there?
It's still there. Okay. Jesus saved a prostitute and brought her into the congregation. And now Palestinians, we did the same thing 2,000 years later with Mia Khalifa. We brought her out and she's now part of the congregation. Okay? Because that's the power of the truth.
Yeah.
When you start telling the truth and you stand up for what's right, we don't care what else you did. See, that is a very powerful, beautiful thing. Israel never have that because they're lying. They're lying about everything. And we know that, and they know that. That's why they want to shut us up.
And I think that's a good way to end it.
I think it's a good way to end it. Mike, I want you to know that I love you and I'm proud of you for everything you're doing.
I love you and I'm proud of you too,
thanks,
Dad.
Man. Thanks.
Guys, tell everybody how they can follow you.
Man. Please follow me. It's A-M-E-R, like America, Z-A-H-R. A-M-E-R-Z-A-H-R. That is my handle on Twitter and Instagram. You put that in. Please on Facebook, follow my, if you're over 75, follow me on Facebook. Follow my page, not my profile. And yeah, man, we need all the support we can get. And keep your eyes open because we're coming out with this comedy special in the next few weeks.
This guy's a funny man. Follow him. Follow me, MikeFromDetroit.com. That's the best way to find me, even on Pornhub. Mike from Detroit. Everything, Mike from Detroit. You know how to find me. MikeFromDetroit.com. October 9th, I'll be here at Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle with Ahmed Al-Qadri, another Yemeni comic. And we're going to get Michael Schertzer to host for us, the pro-Palestinian American Jew. Michael Schertzer, yes, also man. A funny comedian. Yeah. Amer, you're the best. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you, man.
We weren't even going to do another podcast this week, but when I was in town, I had to get you on. So
thanks.
That was a good way to end it. Guys, follow him. Follow me. Until next time, next Wednesday, I'll see you. Peace out.
Public Yemeni number one.